From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
I'll go back to kind of the first book, which is Embracing the Real World, The Black Woman's Guide to Life After College. And I got the idea for Career Guide in general geared towards women when I graduated, because I was 21, and unlike a lot of my peers, I had a job. But I found that I had all these book smarts, and you know, I knew how to edit and write and run a newspaper, but I was kind of lacking the professional smarts. We were just kind of chatting beforehand, and we were talking about negotiating your salary. I didn't know that, you know, when they offered me a certain salary, I could have asked for more, including health insurance, okay? And so it's like things like that that I didn't know, and there were all these other things, like managing my boss, handling conflicts with coworkers, working, you know, on a budget. This is my first time, you know, having to pay all my bills by myself, having to, you know, have an apartment, have a car, do my W-9, you know, do my taxes. And I didn't know any of that.
Chaz Pitzkaiser, author of Careerista, The Woman's Guide to Success After College. With college graduation approaching for many women in this country, the main question on their minds is, what will I do with my degree? For women, it is hard to strive and achieve their career goals in such a male-dominated and competitive workforce. For some, it may seem intimidating and overwhelming. However, Pitzkaiser has worked to empower women to embrace the workforce and overcome the challenges that women face every day going for their dream job. Pitzkaiser feels that women should have the available resources and tools to truly achieve their goals and desires in the working world. With 32 chapters, this book details out resources, plans, and advice on how to best achieve where you need and want to be after college for young women. The book also includes personal stories about her experiences in the working world. I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Careerista, The Woman's Guide to Success After College, with Chaz Pitzkaiser, In Black America.
I think the first thing that all college graduates need to do, and this is not just women, but men too, is to think outside the box when it comes to the type of company you're going to work for. A lot of college graduates, they'll look at only applying for quote-unquote big-name companies. I've seen business majors do this. They want to work for a Fortune 500 company, or their accounting major, and they want to work for the top four accounting firms. But every one of their mom has an accounting department. You know, even small businesses have an accounting department, and it's often easier to get into smaller companies, which is what I did. That's how I got my first job, working for a small newspaper. So people who are actually job searching need to think outside the box for the size of the company they're willing to work for, and in the end of the industry. For example, hospitals aren't the only place to hire nurses. And with communication degrees, I've seen so many people applying for newspapers, but there's so many nonprofits and organizations that are in need of people with communications degrees. So think outside the box.
Just 30 minutes of watching the news is enough to make the average woman graduating from college want to crawl back beneath the covers. The headlines always seem to come back to the sluggish economy, high rate of unemployment, fierce competition for jobs, and ultimately just how unlucky young professionals are for having to build a career amid such misfortune. The bad news, it really is a tough time for recent graduates. The good news, Chaz Pitzkaiser's 32-chapter guide will give readers everything they need to know regarding job searching in such a tough job market. Interviewing for jobs, succeeding in a new position, building a positive professional image, managing their boss, and getting their finances in check. Born in San Diego, California, but raised in Texas, Pitzkaiser earned a bachelor's degree in journalism and sociology from Texas State University and received a master's degree in publishing from Pace University. At the age of 21, she became one of the youngest African Americans in this nation to serve as the managing editor of a Black-owned weekly newspaper.
I pretty much always had a love of books and literature and careers. I've always been interested in how people actually find their careers, become successful in their careers. I received my master's in Pace University, so I went from Texas to the East Coast by myself when I was probably like 22, and I received my master's in book publishing, which pretty much put me on the path towards publishing my book and helping other self-publishing authors as well.
What sparked that initial interest in journalism?
In journalism? I I've always been a really good writer. My father is also, and books were always in my house. So I just grew up reading, and I grew up reading newspapers. And I found that, and well, of course, that you know, as you know, that the media is a very powerful influence. And I wanted to be an influencer. So when I graduated, I got into newspaper publishing. And don't be mad, but I kind of got out of journalism and kind of got into the book publishing aspect, which is, you know, still working to empower and inspire people the same way the journalism does.
Any brothers and sisters?
I have a brother, Chase, who's, oh, Lord, you want to give me that 29, and my sister, I'm just turned 30, and they both live in Texas, actually.
Tell us about becoming one of the youngest African Americans to serve as the managing editor of a Black-owned weekly newspaper.
Okay, well, I got started really early. My high school year, I was the editor of my high school newspaper, and I was looking for an internship before I went to college, and I saw one advertised at La Vida News, the Ebony Voice, which still exists in Fort Worth. It's owned by the Pruitt Group. And, of course, I applied, and I got hired on the spot by Ms. Rhonda Pruitt, who is I still love. She's still a really good mentor for me and to me. And so I started working as editorial assistant my senior year in high school. And even when I went to college, every year I would come back and intern. And so then she boosted me up from editorial assistant to assistant editor. And by the time I graduated, I had enough experience to be hired for the Houston newspaper, and I was just 21. And that was a really wonderful experience.
What brought you to the point of writing? This is your second book, I understand.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Career Nista is my second book.
So what brought you to the point to write this book?
Well, I'll go back to kind of the first book, which is Embracing the Real World, The Black Woman's Guide to Life After College. And I got the idea for Career Guide in general geared towards women when I graduated because I was 21, and unlike a lot of my peers, I had a job. But I found that I had all these book smarts, and, you know, I knew how to edit and write and run a newspaper, but I was kind of lacking the professional smarts. We were just kind of chatting beforehand, and we were talking about negotiating your salary. I didn't know that, you know, when they offered me a certain salary, I could have asked for more, including health insurance, okay? And so it's like things like that that I didn't know, and there were all these other things like managing my boss, handling conflicts with coworkers, working, you know, on a budget. This is my first time, you know, having to pay all my bills by myself, having to, you know, have an apartment, have a car, do my W-9, you know, do my taxes. And I didn't know any of that. And so I knew that there was a career guide needed. I wanted to gear towards Black women in general so I could kind of discuss the issues that we faced as African-American women in the workplace, including some of the negative perceptions about us. Now, that book did very, very well, and I published it in 2007. And then maybe like 2 years ago, people kept saying, okay, the career guide for Black women was excellent, but, you know, women of all ethnicities need a career guide, including those, you know, starting out in the workplace. And so that's what led me to write this one as well because, you know, women, we face common challenges in the workplace, and we need a career advice. Many of us just do not have it.
I was pretty impressed with the thoroughness of the book.
Thank you.
One thing I didn't know is 1.6 million bachelor's degrees are conferred every year in this country.
And counting.
That's a lot of degrees, and I guess there's a rollover effect for those that don't find employment that first year out of college.
There's a lot of competition, and what college graduates need to keep in mind is that they're not only competing with each other and the people who graduated last year, but now because of the economic downturn and because of so many layoffs, they're competing with more senior-level people.
Mm-hmm.
So you're having mid-level people going back and applying for entry-level positions, which is kicking, you know, college graduates kind of, you know, out of those positions. So it's kind of harder than ever for young professionals to secure those positions that they need to get started in their careers. The most important thing you can be is proactive when you graduate, not act like your degree is some magic wand that's going to guarantee you a job, because it's not.
Tell us about the initial process of going and looking for a position, and hopefully that position that you're looking for is going to lead to a career. The first thing that needs to take place.
There's a whole bunch of things, but I think maybe I'll focus more so on two. I think the first thing that all college graduates need to do, and this is not just women, but men too, is to think outside the box when it comes to the type of company you're going to work for. A lot of college graduates, they'll be only applying for for quote-unquote big-name companies. I've seen business majors do this. They want to work for a Fortune 500 company, or their accounting major, and they want to work for the top four accounting firms. But every one of their mom has an accounting department. You know, even small businesses have an accounting department, and it's often easier to get into smaller companies, which is what I did. That's how I got my first job, working for a smaller newspaper. So people who are actually job searching need to think outside the box for the size of the company they're willing to work for and in the end of the industry. For example, nurses aren't the only hospitals aren't the only place to hire nurses. And with communication degrees, I've seen so many people applying for newspapers and radio, well, not newspapers and magazines, mm-hmm. but there's so many nonprofits and organizations that are in need of people with communications degrees. So think outside the box. The second thing is that I think too many people are still reliant on the old way of job searching, which is through just looking online for jobs. You'll go on CareerBuilder.com and Indeed.com, and they'll spend hours constantly checking those posts, when most jobs aren't even posted. And so you have to be more active in looking for employment, including through social media, being on LinkedIn, having a really good profile, but also getting outside of the house, away from your computer, and actively networking, being a part of professional organizations, and getting yourself in front of people who can hire you.
How important is alumni associations and volunteerism?
Well, alumni associations are really good depending on the school. Some schools, I found, they don't really keep active lists of where people are working. So hopefully you're at a school, like Texas State, for example, and Pace University, where I graduated from. They have lists that show where a lot of graduates are working, and they kind of pair you sometimes with alumni like you who are already active in the field. So it kind of depends on your university. But one thing that you do have control over is volunteering. So whatever field you're in, there's a place that you can be volunteering or joining a professional organization or even doing things for free for small businesses. So, for example, if you just graduated and you're finding it extremely hard to find a job, I would go and I would volunteer my services for a company or consider doing another internship, because internships aren't just for people who are in college. You can be 40, 50, 60 years old and go get an internship, and it doesn't have to be advertised. Again, it's about being proactive and, you know, just asking someone directly, could I be your intern? You know, 5 hours, 10 hours, it doesn't matter, to gain the experience that you need.
I understand. If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny L. Hansen, Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio, and we're speaking with Chaz Pitts-Kaiser, author of Careerista, The Women's Guide to Success After College. Ms. Pitts-Kaiser, how important it is for you to be realistic about setting your career goals? 5, 10, 15 years down the road. You're mapping out your future.
The first thing I wanted to be when I was going to go to quote unquote grow up was a CIA agent, and we see how that turned out. I'm too scared of blood and too scared of different bad things happening. So I think ideally it would be great if everyone could know what they were going to do 20 years down the road, but that's not how life works. And so what I think is more important is for you to set small goals that lead to bigger goals. So it's fine for you to know kind of where you want to be 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road. But really, what are you going to do right this second? So if you want to be an account executive, okay, right now you need to focus on the small step, getting into accounting, number one. So I urge people to always have a wider plan, but just focus on what you're doing right now. And also, you have to be flexible, because oftentimes things just do not work out as you had planned, or you find even bigger and better opportunities. So don't be so stuck on one set career path that you miss out on things that could lead to bigger and better things.
I understand. Okay, you found that position. And tell us some of the do's and don'ts in applying for that position.
Do's and don'ts. Well, first, can you please have, I shouldn't say it like that, but please have a professional resume. So I do professional resume writing. And it's just like really weird to me about the types of resumes that I see that people have been sending out. So I've looked at resumes where people have their picture on a resume, and this is for an executive assistant position, or this is for a nuclear scientist whose resume I did. He had his picture on there, and that's pretty much a don't. Or you'll say how many children that you have, or that you enjoy hiking. Those types of things don't go on a resume. So either be really diligent in crafting a professional resume, or go ahead and invest the time to get one done. So again, present a really good resume, or else you just won't be able to get the interview. The second thing is to have a really, really good cover letter, and not one that you just send out to everyone, but one that's tailored toward the position, because employers really can tell when you've done your research. So in order to get an interview, you first have to have those two things well laid out and well done, and that's your resume and your cover letter to land you in an interview.
Now, once you send in your resume and your cover letter, what's the next steps that you need to take?
Follow up. So what will happen is that people will send in their resume and their cover letter, and then they don't hear anything back. And, well, they just don't hear anything back, and they move on. But employers appreciate people, sometimes appreciate people who follow up. So unless it says absolutely no phone calls, please, then the next week you need to be following up saying, dear so-and-so, I applied for the social worker position last week, and I'm still very much interested in it. Have you had a chance to look at my resume and cover letter? Because people often get hundreds of resumes and cover letters for every one position, and you need to make yourself stand out. And one of those ways is by following up and showing that you're proactive and you really want the job.
I had skipped a step, so I'm going to come back to this.
Oh, we're
now
going through all the steps. That's okay. I got it.
You're sending your resume out, but there's three ways to get your resume in front of an individual. One is by mail, the other is by fax, and the other is in person. Give us a synopsis of the three ways and some of the things you should do and shouldn't do in those particular areas.
Well, I think more often than not, today's employers are going to want you to send by email. So first, follow directions. If it says fax, don't try to go hand it in person. If it says email, don't send a fax. So number one, follow directions. What I think you're referring to, one of the tips that I give when applying for positions is that if you're emailing it, I always like to send my things as a PDF. So I know that a lot of people will send their resume and their cover letter in Word, and that can really end up backfiring on you because sometimes people don't have your actual font in Word. And so when you create, what I advise people to do is turn your resume into a PDF and attach it as that. And if someone specifically says they want a Word resume, so that if they don't have your font, your resume doesn't come out looking all, you know, kooky, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. Other things that you pointed out that I think the audience should know, you need to know the correct spelling of the person that you're addressing. And you just can't assume that Sherry is a man or a woman. You need to make sure that you're actually addressing the person properly.
Yes, because I get called Mr. Kaiser all day long because my name's Chaz.
Okay. And the other thing about emailing, and it can be kind of tricky, you need to know who you're emailing the individual to, right? Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I mean, I think it's always important, again, be proactive. Do a little digging instead of making it to whom it may concern. Go out and find who you would most likely be sending your cover letter and resume to and actually call the company and say, I'm applying for such and such position. Who should I address my cover letter to? Because people really do appreciate it. People go that extra effort, and it makes it more personal for it actually to be addressed to a specific person instead of just, you know, random dear company, as many people actually do.
I know that's right. Okay, so you got the resume out. The HR or hiring person has looked at it, and they're interested in you. And now you get a call back for an interview.
Uh-oh.
Hello.
Yay.
And prior to the interview, what should take place?
Prior to the interview, you should be researching the company. Okay, you should be acting like it's someone that you're planning a date. You want to know everything, the last thing there is to know about them.
Okay.
So there's no surprises in the interview. So there's a couple of ways you can go about that. Most companies have websites that provide, you know, an About Us section.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it's always a good idea to go on LinkedIn and Google the person who may be interviewing you so you can kind of see their background as well so that you can even know what they look like.
That would help.
You're right.
Because you get on the elevator with them, right?
Yeah, you're on the elevator, and you shut the door on them because you're in such a hurry to get to your interview, and then they're the same person interviewing you. So just small things like that. But number one is researching the company so you can better ask and answer questions and let them know, tell them how you can be an asset. You know what their weaknesses are, know what their projects are, so you can speak directly to that.
How important is for you to practice the interview?
Well, when I taught journalism at Langston University, and for all of my students, I did mock interviews. And I think it's very important because a lot of people, they're intimidated and they're scared by the interview, but of course it's something that you have to do. So you have to get comfortable asking answering and asking questions. So like for the mock interviews I conduct with my students, I actually had them dress up. I would encourage you to dress up and have another professional, or if you're a student, your current, like if you're interning somewhere, the person you're interning for, your professor, actually conduct a mock interview and tell you if you're dressing appropriately, because a lot of people go into interviews dressed entirely inappropriately, and to go ahead and ask you questions and see how you come across so that you don't have all these butterflies when you go into your initial interview and you know what you should and should not be saying.
If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O. Hanson, Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio. And we're speaking with Chaz Pitts Kaiser, author of Korea Nista, The Women's Guide to Success After College. Well, you brought me leap forward with the dress-up part. So go through what you should and shouldn't wear to an interview.
Oh, well, it's really different for men and women. But I will give you the biggest, please don't do this if you want to get hired, things that I've seen. Okay. And these are things I've actually seen from interviewing people and seeing it on interviews and then having my own students do mock interviews. So this is for the ladies. Nothing tight, right? You do not want a man, if he's interviewing you, to be interviewing you and looking at your bosom because it's all hanging out. But you'll find that people wear things that are entirely too tight around the top or entirely too tight, you know, on their butt to be, you know, quite blatant. So make sure that you have a suit that is tailored to fit you and that complements your body but doesn't, you know, kind of flaunt your body if you're a woman. You should also make sure that you're wearing kind of neutral colors.
Okay.
And this is for men or women. So black, brown, gray. A lot of people have a flair for fashion, but the interview is not the time to show someone how well you can dress or like it's Project Runway. That's not what the interview is.
Mm-hmm.
You need to err on the conservative side because you never know, you know, what the other person's feeling is regarding to dress. No after five makeup for an interview. So you got to ditch women, the heavy eyeshadow, mm-hmm. the mascara. And I would think especially, and this is speaking to African-American women, that I would never in my life tell someone not to wear natural hair because I have locks.
Okay.
But what I would tell you is to wear a simple hairstyle so that your hair is not a distraction in an interview, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. You said the interview is a two-way street. You have the hiring person interviewing you, but you need some give and take on your part of having an actual conversation with the interviewee. Interviewer,
right.
Excuse me.
Right. So many people, and I used to do this, I go into the interview, and all I want to do is be hired. But maybe you really don't need to be working there. Maybe there's some things about this company that you really don't know. And so, I mean, yes, they're hiring you, and they'll be, you know, giving you a paycheck, but you'll also be contributing your time and your talent. So it needs to be a place that you really would feel comfortable working. You won't know that unless you're asking certain questions, unless you're finding out more about the company, such as the work hours. And such as how the camaraderie is in the office. But people tend to, they don't really ask questions. And interviewers like it, you know, when you seem like you want to know more about the company and the way that they normally operate and what it is that they in particular like and dislike about working for the company.
I found it interesting of the quotes in which you have in each chapter. A lot of research went into that.
A lot of, so you're talking about the quotes at the top of the book.
At the top of the book, right.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So, yeah, each chapter, and I have 32 chapters. I tried to make it like an A to Z Bible.
Right.
For women. Each chapter starts off with an inspirational quote. And, yes, I tailored each quote towards the chapter. And I did spend a lot of time. I have quotes by men and women.
Right.
I did spend a lot of time. And people who knew that I was working on the book would sometimes send me quotes, you know, to choose from as well. And then I have the quotes. And then, of course, in addition to my own career advice, I have career advice by more than 50 different experts and seasoned professionals in the book as well, and some essays by other women.
Before we run out of time, Ms. Pitts-Kaiser, you've gone through the interview, and They've made you a job offer. How do you go about evaluating that offer?
Well, you first look at what is the normal price range. So someone in you're in Austin.
Right.
Someone in Austin maybe offered a certain amount, which may be fine and dandy, but if you're in D.C., where your rent, like my rent is like $1,800 mm-hmm. for a one-bedroom, that's not going to cut it. So you have to make sure that the salary is appropriate for where you're living and your job. And where you're living, number one, but also your skill set. And I would encourage anyone, don't accept the first thing that's thrown out. Employers often expect, even for entry-level positions, for you to negotiate your salary. And even if you get $2,000 more, well, that's $2,000 more. And what's also important to note is that the salary you start off with upon graduation kind of almost dictates the salary that you're going to have throughout your career. So it's hard for you to start off making $32,000 and then in your next job ask for $60,000
right.
because they always want to go back and see what you first made. So you want to be proactive and kind of try to get the highest possible salary. And I found that women often fail to negotiate their salary because they don't want to come off as, you know, aggressive. But there's nothing aggressive about getting the salary that you deserve.
I'm glad you brought up the term aggressive. Are African-American or women in general perceived differently than men when they go in and want to negotiate or being assertive about their career and future?
Well, I don't think there's a difference between African-American women. I mean, African-American women and African-American men. I think there's a difference between women in general and men in general.
Okay.
And I think part of the difference is women believe that they're seen as aggressive. But an employer who is hiring expects for you to negotiate your salary. And it's not going to come as a surprise
mm-hmm.
if they say, okay, the salary offer is $50,000, and you say, well, I was more so expecting to get $55,000. They're not going to be like, oh, my God, I can't believe she asked for more money. No one's going to say that. They expect that. And so I more so think that as women, we've kind of been taught that, you know, to be nice or not be pushy. But asking for more money is not pushy. I just had a guy just emailed me. I'm doing his resume. And I quoted him a certain amount. And he emailed me right back and said, oh, I can't do that. Can you do it for this? And I was like, sure. But women hardly will ever do that to me.
Chaz Pitts-Kaiser, author of Careerista, The Woman's Guide to Success After College. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at jhanson, H-A-N-S-O-N, at KUT.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at KUT.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.